Today, housing markets vomit fear into year's end. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well noted posts covering finance and problem news. Well, how quickly sentiment can turn as Australians' favourite sport, housing, turns sour into the end of the year. Instead of more rate cuts next year, the promise of which had pulled prospective purchasers forward to buy, it's being replaced by significant gloom. The signs were always there, of course, despite the spin from government, as affordability is still horrid for many, despite banks offering bigger, longer mortgages at high income multiples. Demand stoked by high inward migration, and property investors still fooled by the prospect of returns that for many never come. Overlay the massive push from government in terms of the first-time buyer incentives, 5% deposits and no LMI, as well as shared equity and 2% deposits for some, and the politics of property has clearly overridden common sense. The latest hit this week was from the RBA, as they held rates and signalled that the next rate move would probably be up, with economists recutting their forecasts and markets sending bond yields and fixed-rate mortgages higher. In a final press conference for the year last week, Reserve Bank of Australia Governor Michelle Bullock ruled out interest rate cuts for the foreseeable future. Bullock said the board had not even considered a rate cut. Instead, it had considered the circumstances under which it would start to raise rates. So all up, it does now appear that house price growth is at a standstill in the biggest markets of Sydney and Melbourne as aspiring home buyers hold fire amid an uncertain outlook on interest rates. The preliminary auction clearance rate fell to 62.7% this week. That's the lowest initial success rate in more than a year, and a further weakening on the previous week's preliminary result of 63.5%, according to Cotality. The overall volume of listings fell as well. While the reduction in volume is following the typical seasonal pattern, the gradual easing in auction clearance rates, which has been evident since the middle of September, has more to do with market conditions, Cotality said. Over the past 4 weeks, Cotality's daily price index for Sydney shows zero growth, while in Melbourne, growth eased back to 0.1% over the same period. Sydney's preliminary clearance rate fell to 58.1%. That's 3.4 percentage points lower than a week earlier, while Melbourne's initial success rate held steady at 65.7%. And auction results reported by Domain shows the same trend, with just 426 properties in Sydney reported sold compared to the 1,113 listed, and 669 sold in Melbourne compared to the 1,421 listed there. AMP shows the significant turnaround in clearance and momentum in the market, and of course it's all linked to interest rates. Domain said this week that mortgage holders are facing deep affordability issues because they are managing repayments that are significantly higher than they were before the tightening cycle began in 2022. On the flip side, the market slowdown creates an opportunity for buyers because there will be quite a few sellers who had failed to sell during the spring season and would be keen to find a buyer before Christmas, said Louis Christopher, founder of property analytics firm SQM Research. Sellers can be a little bit more negotiable at this time of year, he said. And yes, supply is indeed rising as some buyers are now biting the bullet and trying to quit the market before things turn worse still. Property investors, by the way, are leading the charge, especially in Melbourne, where net yields and gross yields are falling and now falling hard. Meanwhile, in the smaller capital cities, Brisbane's preliminary clearance rate strengthened to 60.3%. Adelaide's dipped to 69.7%, and Canberra's ticked higher to 59.6%. Now, it's worth noting that underquoting is still rabid, where vendors are being cajoled to drop their asking prices and face selling for less than they expected, as many homeowners in New South Wales and Victoria are paying the price as the illegal practice taints their selling campaign, wiping hundreds of thousands of dollars off the value of their homes. So we should ask the question, where should the blame be sheeted for this apparent rapid change in the property weather? Well, certainly Reserve Bank Governor Michelle Bullock, warning this week that the renewed inflation challenge means interest rates may need to rise, is part of the story. But Jim Chalmers has been busy putting the finishing touches to his mid-year budget update. And I noted that Chalmers emphasised that the RBA's statement made no mention of government spending contributing to price pressures. Now, he knows higher interest rates in the new year are plausible and wants to insulate his economic stewardship from blame. But actually, a lot of blame should be sheeted there. On cue, Chalmers this week spoke of difficult budget decisions ahead of next week's budget update. And he announced a $6.8 billion spend so far on energy bill subsidies would not be extended beyond December. Now, that was probably sensible and necessary, but of course it puts more pressure back on households. If Labour could not turn off the subsidies so soon after a thumping election win in May, and more than 2 years from the next election, the rebates would have become a permanent feature of the budget and shredded its economic credibility some more. The temporary federal and state energy bill subsidies artificially reduced measured inflation earlier in the year, conveniently before the election, of course, but stubborn price pressures never really went away. And yes, I see that in my surveys. More households are still under the gun from a cash flow perspective. Strong federal and state government spending is certainly not the sole cause of persistent inflation pressures, but government outlays are undoubtedly a major contributor, compounded by large government mandated pay increases and weak productivity growth since the 2020 pandemic. Federal spending surged an extraordinary 8% in nominal terms in the year ending June 30th to $727 billion. During the election campaign, that's triple the rate of the RBA's inflation target and indisputably stimulatory in an economic sense. And it was, of course, an economy already battling inflation, full employment, and capacity constraints. Chalmers hit the roof last year when an RBA board meeting statement published in June 2024 noted recent budget outcomes may also have an impact on demand, although federal and state energy rebates will temporarily reduce headline inflation. Actually, media picked up on the RBA's messaging and suggested Chalmers' extra $24 billion of policy spending in the 2024 budget was at odds with the bank's efforts to tame inflation. RBA warns on budget spending surge and RBA raises alarm over big spending budget, led the newspapers the next day. Not long afterwards, a frustrated Chalmers rang Bullock to voice his displeasure, as the AFR magazine revealed in a detailed profile of the Treasurer back in February. Labour's track record on spending does demonstrate that you must judge its actions, not its words. Within hours of Chalmers pledging difficult decisions and budget responsibility, Labour's $15 billion National Reconstruction Fund was providing $45 million of borrowing to taxpayer money to lend to food manufacturer Arnott's. Maker of Tim Tam biscuits and Jack's crackers is owned by one of the world's biggest private equity firms, KKR. And on Friday, Albanese unveiled billions more in unquantified energy subsidies from the government's Snowy Hydro project to keep open the economically marginal Rio Tinto-owned Tomago aluminium smelting plant in New South Wales. That means taxpayers will in effect foot the bill to paper over rocketing energy prices for the state's biggest electricity users, while of course private users and households are paying ever more. Under Labour's watch, federal spending has reached 27% of GDP. That's the highest since the 1980s, excluding the 2 years of pandemic stimulus under the former Morrison coalition government. The spending tally is understated, of course, because it excludes $12 billion of under-the-radar so-called off-budget spending last year on items like student loan forgiveness, Snowy Hydro, MBN, the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, and the loan to Papua New Guinea. And that excludes the Tomago rescue package, by the way. Chalmers and Gallagher have already flagged They must find room for an additional $6.3 billion for damaging natural disasters, $3 billion more for age pensions, $2.1 billion more for military superannuation schemes, an extra $1.3 billion for health and other care services for veterans. These are largely the unavoidable costs of being in government. The biggest job in the mid-year update has been making room for unavoidable pressures and payments without a substantial deterioration in the bottom line, Chalmers said. Our predecessors underfunded services and shamefully shortchanged veterans, but we take our responsibility to these people very seriously, and we'll always make room in the budget to do the right thing for these Australians. They will be seeking out all of the hollow logs they can. For example, Labor will gradually increase the investment returns that pensioners are deemed to earn from their private assets back to more realistic levels. That will reduce future pension payments, although be cleverly masked by the deeming rate being adjusted at the same time in March and September that pension payments go up in line with inflation. And elsewhere, the $52 billion National Disability Insurance Scheme risks doubling again to around $100 billion a year within a decade or so, according to government accounting. More than 3 years after Labor formed government, it remains the biggest spending blowout in the budget. A tax break for electric vehicles is projected to blow out to more than $23 billion over the coming decade to exempt typically high-income drivers from paying fringe benefit tax. And the Productivity Commission has called on the government to dump the policy, by the way. Chalmers and Bowen announced on Friday afternoon the electric car discount would be reviewed. In a sign, the FBT exemption could well be axed. In Canberra, ministers and public service departments have been ordered to identify the lowest priority 5% spending across portfolios, but total spending has gone up significantly, meaning that any savings, and then some, have been spent elsewhere. There are gross savings, but not net spending cuts. And of course, labour productivity in the market sector has grown by 1% over the past 12 months, while labour productivity in the non-market, the government sector, has actually shrunk by a further 0.3%. Chalmers, from next week, will be armed with 5 Productivity Commission reports that he needs to action next year, stretching across red tape, business taxes, artificial intelligence, energy transition, and the care economy. The challenge will be to grasp the nettle to impose meaningful reforms after the August 3-day economic roundtable, which, while so far has created very little in terms of outcomes. Opposition leader Susan Ley has warned that Australia is trapped in a post-pandemic mindset of government dependency that is exacerbating intergenerational inequality by driving up debt for younger and future generations. And Shadow Treasurer Ted O'Brien has blamed the inflation outbreak on Labour's runaway spending. But it does remain to be seen if the coalition will follow through on that rhetoric with tough budget actions. What you suspect, probably not. Two cheeks of the same bum. While Australia now stands at a bit of a fork in the road, and more disciplined government spending and productivity-boosting policies would help the RBA manage renewed inflation pressures, housing looks to be set to take a bit of a bath. Delays in funding agreements awarded last year will force some community housing providers to give up projects that are no longer viable for them to develop, according to the Housing Australia Chief Executive Scott Langford. Housing Australia, which has 279 signed contracts to develop 18,650 social and affordable homes from the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, the HAF, was working with successful bidders to hand over projects they could no longer make work to others, Langford said. We expect that there will be some projects that have challenges with planning conditions or finalisation of their arrangements, which could be with builders or investors, where conditions may have changed between when they've signed the contract and now, he said in an interview. His confirmation of the problems, long discussed by developers that have struggled to meet complex demands for the programme to develop 40,000 social and affordable homes in 5 years, adds to criticism of the scheme. The HAF has been a cataclysmic disaster, said opposition housing spokesperson Senator Andrew Bragg, who wants the housing fund scheme, which he calls a boondoggle, abolished. If it's true that round one projects are already being sold, there is more taxpayer-funded waste than I thought. The bottom line is it's slow, inefficient, expensive, and maybe corrupted. After completion, most half-funded projects will be receiving an ongoing annual subsidy called an availability payment for the 25-year time frame of the scheme. With the expiry of subsidies at that time, the housing can then be sold into the private market, meaning it would be lost to the affordable housing sector, prompting some advocates to argue for preference to be given in the latest tender process to providers with a plan to keep those homes for affordable and social rental, even after that. So my point is this: the change in the property weather can be sheeted directly at the current Labour government and their spending policies. The RBA is having to respond with likely higher interest rates, and meantime, individual households are once again caught in the crossfire. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.